For WBAA, I'm Betty Carson. Nick Schinkel, the director of the West Lafayette Public Library, brought in the book The Agony of the Leaves to review. In the description provided by the publisher, quote, "The agony of the leaves is a century-old phrase used in the tea trade to describe the transformative moment in preparing tea, when the oxygen of the boiling water allows the tea leaf to release its flavor. The leaves may appear tormented and miserable like autumn leaves in a storm, but they may also look dancing and fanciful," writes Helen Gustafson. She's been living in this moment for as long as she can remember. Widely famed as the tea guru of Berkeley Chez Panisse, Gustafson is sought after as a lecturer, writer, and irrepressible tea personality. In The Agony of the Leaves, Gustafson creates intersections between her own life and her experiences with tea, unquote. Nick Schinkel begins his review of this book by reading.
When I was a child, the world seemed as sunny and secure as my family's big red brick house on the hill. We had tea every day except Sundays. Tea time remains fixed in my memory as a time of great happiness, since it was the hour when discipline was suspended, all admonishments were silenced, and I became, so to speak, a member of the wedding, a full-fledged person of the household. We always had tea in the sunroom, an airy perch overlooking the sloping lawn above a well-trafficked corner of our genteel neighborhood in St. Paul, Minnesota. It was a room stuffed with good things. The sun poured through what seemed like hundreds of tiny window panes, drenching the piano, my Austrian grandmother Mutti's chocolate brown overstuffed chair, the creaky rocker left over from her parsonage days, pots and pots of ivy, hyacinths, paper whites, cacti, espaliered vines of all kinds, books and papers, baskets of knitting, the Chinese checker set, my tiny red-robed Chinese doll. All these lovely things crammed in a room set against a dazzling green plaid linoleum floor. Basic and elementary as they were, these simple teas in the sunroom were among the best tea times of my life. On some afternoons in early spring, I would enter the house, my head spinning. The sky was too blue, the budding branches too quivery, and the high-pitched odor of the hyacinths and paper whites exactly matched the headachy overstimulation I had carried home from school. The accumulated tension of spring made me long to fall back into the oak chair, clutching my cup of tea. Within minutes, I was calmed. The gentle conversation, the milky tea, and the bit of carbohydrate all did their work. This calming effect remains one of the mysteries and delights of tea. So opens The Agony of the Leaves, the ecstasy of my life with tea. Fantastic title. To my surprise, foodie books, and this is certainly one of those, continue to pop up cheerfully in the bestseller lists of Book World. And so I am delighted to introduce you to The Agony of the Leaves, a foodie book, if ever there was one. Tea, the subject of the book, we associate it with the British, the Japanese, the Chinese. Yet today's book plunks tea in its many variations and wonders into a clearly American context. For heaven's sake, it starts in St. Paul, Minnesota. Yes, The Agony of the Teas is as much a celebration of the accoutrements of tea and tea time as it is about the tea itself, as our author tells us a little more about those early days in her lives and her memories of tea. The tea and cookies joined a hodgepodge of cups and saucers and on an oval golden oak tea tray made by Papa, along with a sugar bowl, a small pitcher of milk. My favorite was a smiling jack-o'-lantern one, but if it wasn't clean, a juice glass would do. Lemon slices and a bowl for the slops. Next, Mother took a second pot, an ordinary brown Betty, warmed it and handed it over for me to carry. Nothing matched. All was serviceable. The rule for the teacups and cookie plates was no more than 10 cents a piece at the dime store. It was homely in the best way. Think of Little Women, and you've got it. The writing, as you can hear, is bright and cheering as the charming Grandma Moses-esque watercolor paintings that dot the text with salient points of the story. And delicious recipes expanding the story into our world dot the pages, too. But there's so much more than the obvious joys of tea in The Agony of the Leaves. After our gentle introduction to Gustafson's childhood fascination with tea and her parents' faculty home in the 1940 hills of St. Paul, we enter into the next stage of her life as she honeymoons in Ireland, where her love of tea found itself encouraged in the midst of the newly married couple's tour of the Emerald Isle. While the couple often found that tea in rural Ireland was, quote, invariably and maddeningly precisely the same every day, no matter where we took it. Regardless of how many miles lay between Monday's tea and Tuesday's tea, the tea service looked eerily familiar. Yet, much of the newlyweds' experience with tea in Ireland were certainly not without their charm and excitement. In fact, she has this to say at one point about that Emerald Isle tour. Reverently and somewhat shakily, we poured the tea. It was malty and rich and a bit muddy, as if it had been made in a hurry. There was no hint of smokiness, but it still had depth and an expansive allure about it that was almost seductive. I suspect we were just famished, but I remember it as being two or three cuts above hotel and bed and breakfast teas, and I've never tasted its equal. I think that was the afternoon in Ireland that wedded me to tea as assuredly as I was wedded to my mate. Tea in my youth had been liberating, a path to self-confidence. The notion that I could achieve had softly crept into my consciousness as I smiled and snuggled into bed after a wonderful Faculty Follies tea. This experience was altogether different. This tea, this Emerald Isle tea, had given me not just self-esteem, but courage. Tea still makes me brave. A stout mug of good, strong black tea, and I feel ready to face the most difficult phone call. A famous remark by Elizabeth I came to mind, quote, "I may be a woman, but I have the heart and stomach of a king," end quote. I held my head high as I lowered myself into the car and closed the door. I had two serious lifetime loves now, my own sweetheart and tea. Well, returning to the States with her husband, of course, Gustafsson and her husband settle in the San Francisco area. And there follows the not-so-usual story of her plunge into the world of tea commerce, both as a tea shop owner and purveyor of the famed Chaise Panisse in Berkeley, California, and as a selector of tea from what has become a truly a complex who-knows-who world of business. And then as she subtitles her first chapter about her life as a tea maven, certainly she is, and restaurateur, quote, "my early days at Chez Panisse, converting the heathen," end quote, we get to the heart of this writer. She is a tea purveyor who is evangelistic about teas. Gustafsson began as a waitress at that famed Berkeley, California tea room and was delighted when she became its tea buyer and enthusiast. A career she parlayed, to our delight as well as hers, into that of a respected tea journalist and author of this and several other delightful books on the many olfactory, visual, and imaginary wonders of tea. Yet it is the tales and anecdotes about tea that are the heart and soul of The Agony of the Leaves, and that makes this so much more than a run-of-the-mill commodity or restaurant tale. There are plenty of those. This is a foodie's remembrance and celebration of things past and nearly present. We've mentioned her childhood remembrances and that honeymoon in Ireland that are filled with these charming anecdotes, and there are so many more. There are the tea inns she began in the early 1970s, and yes, they're just about what you might think they are. They're tea inns. The discovery of her own Dr. Johnson, who kind of takes up residency in that famed tea room in Berkeley, much to her delight. Her visit to the famous Waters Upton Tea Room, where our now 40-year-old wife, mother, and tea room maven Gustafsson finds a moment to enjoy and savor her tea and her life, and writes about it this way. The sunny room was decorated with a wild variety of unmatched art. Oils, watercolors, collages, macrame mobiles that had the look of a fond grandmother's collection. And my hostess moved through it all with a fond and possessive air. She owned the place. To me, who didn't know where the tuna fish was at home, she appeared to be the chatelaine of a wondrous castle. My little sandwich was moist, dark, delicious, and utterly satisfying, thanks to the excellence of the nut bread, the absence of extraneous elements, the high proportion of dark meat to light, and a light touch with the mayonnaise. I had one hand on the sandwich and the other on my cup of Earl Grey, and emulated my farmer uncle's. A bite, a slurp, a bite, a slurp. A technique that enhances whatever is being consumed, but which can be tricky in public. Children eat and drink like this. They know best. The Earl Grey was a bit stronger now, and the tea and sandwich were in perfect balance. They were reliable Earl Grey. I reflected, really can be the best with tea treats. It's light, and yet just piercing enough to make a comfortable, slightly acidic statement. And it's a tea that never intrudes. Inhaling cup after cup, I vaguely realized it was an excellent Earl Grey, but was too immersed in the pleasures of the combination of tea and food to ask or care what it was. And never once did I let up on the eating and slurping rhythm. My uncles would have been proud of me. That Earl Grey, that day, just got to work and did its job to lift me up and settle me down at the same time. Like any good foodie author whose writing pulls us in, sits us down, and invites us to join in the delight with all things that are eaten and drunk, Gustafsson takes us into her life, and we see the world through her unique lens, the lens of the tea maven. There's a delightful chapter, it's chapter 7, in case you want to go and look at it yourself, which is entitled Later Days, Preaching to the Choir, where she tells us at first about this wonderful experience of getting just the right peach tea. As she writes, I'll give you just a little bit of that particular anecdote. One of my best successes was iced peach tea, using a peach tea I discovered at Fried Teller & Fried, an old, even venerable shop selling tea and coffee. This peach had been created in Germany by rotating black tea in a large oak barrel with a tiny amount of essence drawn from real fruit, not synthesized chemically. Several hours of this blending produces a tea that truly brings on the taste of summer. This emphatically flavored iced tea was an instant hit with both staff and customers. Servers were quick to carry out the instructions I posted. If a customer asks for a slice of lemon, say, "I will bring it if you insist, but please try the tea first. The lemon will kill this tea." Among the bussers, getting the peach right became a serious game. One morning, I stopped in front of a gaggle of them chatting at the pizza oven before plunging into their set tasks. The peach had been made. I took a taste, looking over the refugees from an Our Gang comedy. "Which of you is responsible for this iced tea?" Pushing and shoving, then the newest busser stepped forth. I did it," he said nervously. "It's perfect," I said with a rush of good feeling. The gang roared with laughter and clapped the newcomer on the back. Well, it's writing like that, that along with those watercolor primitive illustrations, that make this book so exciting and so delightful to read. Let's mention, too, before we wrap up, that our author includes helpful snippets telling us in a few brief sentences how we ought to buy, how we ought to steep, and how we ought to serve the many, many teas that Gustafsson knows and tells us about. Let's finish up with this quote from, of all people, Samuel Twining. Yes, Samuel H.G. Twining, OBE, the fellow who is in charge of Twining teas when this book was written. And he has this to say about this delightful book and this delightful woman. "This little book is the charming story of a life entwined with tea. Helen Gustafsson takes us on a journey that reawakens a gentle, civilized sense of values, which is often lost to most of us in the pace of modern life. With the agony of the leaves, Helen Gustafsson makes a warm and inviting addition to the world of tea literature. And it is my hope that you will chuckle and sip your way through the book just as I did." Higher words of praise, I can't think. It's a really delightful book. If you are fascinated by tea, or if you just like good writing about food, whether you like tea or not, I know that you'll enjoy this book as well. If nothing else, pick it up for the title. The Agony of the Leaves, The Ecstasy of My Life with Tea by Helen Gustafsson. It's available at any fine local public library, including, of course, the West Lafayette Public Library.
That's Nick Shinkle, the director of the West Lafayette Public Library, with his review of Helen Gustafsson's book, The Agony of the Leaves, published by Henry Holt and Company.